We live in a world and a culture overwhelmed with worry, anxiety, and stress. Fear of the future is a characteristic of modern society. We see it in the prevalence of alcohol and drug use as people try to medicate the worry away. We see it in the entertainment binging where people try to distract themselves from their worries with all different forms of amusement. We see it in a litany of physical conditions, whether it be issues of digestion, whether it be nervous habits, whether it be high blood pressure and heart issues. All kinds of physical results come about through a life of worry. In this series, we're considering biblical living, and worry is an important aspect of life that we are to deal with. Worry is really a human being meditating, thinking on things that they cannot change or cannot change right now. The opposite of worry, biblically, is trust, faith, belief in something that may happen by the grace of God that gives a calm certainty. God is overseeing what you and I cannot change or cannot change right now. To live with worry is to live with a divided mind. In fact, one New Testament word for worry is the word meritzo, which means to divide, to be double-minded, to have your mind in multiple places. The Bible describes this kind of experience in Ecclesiastes 2 verse 23, where it says, "At night his mind does not rest, does not lie down." Worry is seen in people experiencing irrational fear or panic attacks, spending hours imagining present or future disasters, doing endless mental reviews of past conversations or events, thinking of could have been, should have been, might have been. All of this leads people to live in worry. What is the source of worry? At heart, when we worry, we're making a kind of assessment of whether or not we're going to get something that we want or get something we don't want. For example, wanting a good thing, like a good future for your children, but wanting it too much, where you are trying to control that future in your mind, leads to worry. Or perhaps it can be wanting something that God doesn't want for you, a bad thing, an illicit relationship, a reputation gained through ungodly means, hoping a sin will not be discovered. In these cases, we're wanting a bad thing and wanting it too much. But either way, our heart becomes ruled by a desire. God is excluded. His sovereignty is no longer king. And now we roll in our minds over and over all sorts of scenarios, consequences, solutions that will enable us to gain that thing. Very similar to anger, worry comes from a desire that rules us. What are some of the results of worry? The Bible lists several. First of all, it says that it will negatively affect our body. Proverbs 14 verse 30 says, "A tranquil heart is life to the body, but passion is rottenness to the bones." We all know of ulcers, heart disease, high blood pressure, gastrointestinal problems, even mystery illnesses, forms of breakouts. The truth is that worry exacerbates all other negative physical conditions. Second, the Bible tells us that worry leads us to neglecting life's responsibilities. Proverbs 12:25 says, "Anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down." When we worry, essentially we take today's thoughts and today's energy and we spend it on days that have not yet come, days that may never yet be. The time and mental energy that we spend worrying often then causes a person to neglect their duties today, people that they should love, things that they should get to, habits they should maintain. And as they do that, that has knock-on consequences which leads to further worry. A third effect of worry is bad decisions, fear-driven decisions. When we worry, we act impulsively, we act in unbelief. It's no longer wisdom or principles that drive our decisions, but fear. Think in Scripture of people who acted out of worry. Abraham, who lies and says that Sarah is his sister because he's worried of what will happen if they think she's his wife. Isaac does the same kind of worry-based decision-making. The steward in the parable of the talents is supposedly worried that his master is a hard man, reaping where he hasn't sowed, so out of worry he goes and hides the talent in the ground, instead of working or handing it in to get interest. Worry leads to bad decisions. Worry also leads to sin. Scripture tells us that certain kinds of anxiety and worry are sin. Paul says, be anxious for nothing in Philippians 4 verse 6. Jesus says in Matthew 6:25, do not be worried about your life. All of these are sinful if we do them. A fifth way that worry affects us is it causes a kind of a choking of your spiritual life, a spiritual asphyxiation. In the parable of the sower, Jesus says that some are choked with worries and pleasures of this life and bring no fruit to maturity. Luke 21:34 says, be on guard so that your hearts will not be weighted down with the worries of life. Worry has a way of simply destroying faith, choking it out. Spiritual interests are pushed to the periphery while the worries become idols at which we worship. Worry is a problem. These are very serious negative effects of worry. So what are the things that typically people worry about? Well, one of the biggest is money. Being successful, getting work. This is simply the love of earthly treasure. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 2:22, for what does a man get in all his labor and in his striving with which he labors under the sun? Because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest. This too is vanity. Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. For this reason I say to you, do not be worried about your life. Peter, writing in 1 Peter 5 verse 6, says, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your care or your anxiety on him, because he cares for you. People worry about money, provision, needs, bills. The second thing that people worry about is the future of their children. Of course, this is often for good reason. Proverbs 17:25 says, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. Proverbs 28:7 says, he who keeps the law is a discerning son, but he who is a companion of gluttons humiliates his father. As parents think about the trajectory of their children, very often they see something that is very worrisome. They see children that are headed in a self-destructive direction, and so they worry. A third thing that people worry about is crime, injustice. Psalm 37 verse 1 says, do not fret because of evildoers. Be not envious towards wrongdoers. For they will wither quickly like the grass and fade like the green herb. Even though the psalm tells us not to worry because of evildoers, it's true that this is a major cause of worry. People fret over the injustice and the possibility of attack. A fourth area of worry is people talking against them. Psalm 119:23 says, "Even though princes sit and talk against me, your servant meditates on your statutes." What are people saying about me? What are they whispering? What do they think of me? What do they say about me when they're at home? This becomes a source of massive worry for people who are intent on preserving their image or keeping their reputation up. This causes much worry. Here's a fifth thing that people worry about. That's questions that God won't answer. There are many things that are not revealed to us. Why did Satan fall? Why was Adam allowed to sin? Why did God set up a world in which there would be suffering? Why is there hell? Could that not have been avoided? Why did Jesus have to die on the cross? Wasn't there another way of atonement? Why are humans being given free will if they use it to reject God? Why are some people born in such abject circumstances? Why are some people born with deformities? These are questions that God won't answer, or at least He won't answer them now. In the book of Job, Job is asking those sort of questions. Why is light given to him who suffers? Job 3:20. Why did I not die at birth? Job 3:11. All of this causes worry. As people roll over in their mind, questions of ultimate value, ultimate answers to ultimate questions. And as they sit thinking on these and don't find answers, they worry. Here's a sixth area of worry is simply a lack of information. Proverbs 25:25 says, "Like cold water to a weary soul, so is good news from a distant land." Even though our world is a lot smaller because of the internet, we still worry when we haven't heard from someone. Someone didn't answer us. Someone we know is traveling and we don't know what's gone on. Contact has been cut off. Or we sent an email or a request to someone and they didn't answer us. So we worry. What did they think? Why haven't they answered? What's happened? A lack of information. Some people worry in the seventh place about decision making. They worry that they'll make the wrong decision. We remember that steward in the parable of the talents who was worried about his master's reaction. So he went and hid the talent in the ground. He didn't want to take responsibility for trading or for trying to make more money. And so just the thought of the decision being placed on his shoulders overburdened him. Some people worry about not making the right decision, about not making a perfect decision. Some people worry about the future. Specifically, they worry about possible futures, hypothetical situations, considering what is the worst that can happen, how might it happen, can we prevent it? And as they think about the future, which is of course not here, it's impossible for them to rest. Some people worry about other people's motives, worrying about what people think about them. Saul was worried when the people were singing that song, "Saul has killed his thousands and David his ten thousands." He was sure that this meant that people wanted to replace him with David, imagining people's motives to be evil. Here's a tenth one. People worry about hidden sin being exposed. Proverbs 28:1 says, "The wicked flee when no man pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion." When there's sin that we know is in our hearts and in our lives, we're worried it will catch up with us, and so we spend time fretting, worrying, thinking about how it might be and when it might be exposed. On that same note, people worry about the consequences of past sins. Joseph's brothers were worried that once their father had died, that Joseph would finally retaliate against them and bring justice upon them for all they'd done to him. Jacob himself was worried that Esau would take revenge on him for all of his deceit that he had done to his brother. The consequences of past sins causes people to live in worry. And finally, people worry over petty details. We read about Martha being distracted with all the preparations and fretting over the fact that Mary wasn't helping her. And Jesus had to say, "Martha, Martha, you're worried and bothered about so many things." This kind of worry or fretting is about self-created perfectionistic standards. I want things to be just right when people come over to our house. I want my presentation to be flawless so the boss thinks that I have not overlooked anything. This can very often be the idol of reputation, or a view of God in which we can earn our favor by works. God will love me if I perform perfectly. So, there are 12 different areas in which people worry. And undoubtedly there's many more. Because we're capable of really worrying about anything. We can take anything in the world and turn it into an idol, even hypothetical things, and begin worrying. So, the place to start is to ask, what do you most commonly worry about losing? And secondly, what makes you the most happy when you think you've gained it? Why would we ask these questions? Because they expose the loves of the heart. What we do, including worry, really has to do with what we want. And so, if you want something, you will certainly be tempted to fear losing it. Or if you want something, you will imagine that happiness lies at the end of gaining that thing. Either way, desires fuel worry. Asking that question helps us to x-ray our hearts and see inside. What keeps me awake at night? What do I tend to fret about? What do I find myself rolling over in my mind? When I should be focused on something, what do I tend to get distracted by and go back to thinking on? Those things are usually our worries, and they usually are connected to the things we want the most. At this point, we should talk about what is not an effective solution to worry. One is medication. The truth is, in most cases, drugs do not take care of the cause of emotional pain. They only decrease the awareness of it. In many cases, medication functions like lowering the volume of an alarm. The alarm is there in your heart, the pain is present, and so medication can kind of dull the sense of how piercing or shrieking that pain is. But if the alarm is related to an actual problem, the medication will not by itself take away that pain. A second ineffectual solution is alcohol or recreational drugs. For many people, getting drunk or high or happy helps the person forget his worries. But similar to medication, the problem can very often still remain. And once the effects of alcohol or recreational drugs have worn off, the man still has to face his worries all over again. A third way of not dealing with worry, which is more common amongst Christians, is demanding or untrusting prayers. Some people actually worry while they pray. They're not asking God to fix things. They do a kind of sanctified worry, a worry in which they present their worries to God and kind of name Him as the one they're talking to, but really they're just continuing to fret in unbelief, continuing to make demands, continuing to not trust the outcome, not surrender things to the will of God. So, prayers that are just sanctified worry are certainly not the answer. Well, with all that said, we should now turn our attention to the scriptures and see what does the Bible say about worry. To see it from God's point of view is to be in the position where we can start to address it. The first thing we need to understand is what Jesus teaches about worry, specifically from his Sermon on the Mount. And there Jesus teaches us several things about worry. In Matthew 6:25, Jesus teaches that worry is disobedience. Jesus specifically says in Matthew 6:25, "Therefore I say to you, do not worry about your life." Jesus has told us not to do that. The second thing he taught us is that it's unnecessary to worry. In verse 25, he says, "Is not life not more than food, and the body more than clothing?" Then in verse 30 and 31, Jesus continues to comfort us by telling us how God is in control. He says, "If God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is and tomorrow is thrown into the field, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?" In these verses, Jesus is very clearly telling us that worry is unnecessary when God is going to provide your basic needs. And God argues from the greater to the lesser in these scriptures. He says he cares for creatures' needs, birds and flowers. Therefore, God will definitely care for you since you're worth more than birds and flowers. The third thing Jesus teaches is that worry is useless. In verse 27, he says, "Which of you by worrying can add one cubit to his stature?" In other words, you cannot add a centimeter to your height. You cannot add a kilogram to your weight. You cannot add an hour to your life by worrying. Worrying doesn't benefit you. You don't go anywhere with it. Someone said, worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but you don't get anywhere. The fourth thing that Jesus teaches is that worry is unbelief. Again, in verse 30, he says, "Will he not clothe you, O you of little faith?" He's calling worry unbelief. In essence, worry is doubting God's perfect knowledge, his control, his loving concern. And the fifth thing Jesus says is that worry is ungodly. Because when he says, "After all these things the Gentiles seek," in verse 32, that means the pagans. And so, Jesus is saying that this kind of worry represents a godless, pagan kind of thinking. Because in pagan religions, their gods were untrustworthy, distracted, capricious. Their gods were unpredictable. And for many people, they think of God like that. Either impersonal, unavailable, or sometimes a sentimental grandfather, but rather befuddled by life's complexities, or maybe even a distant clockmaker who just wound up the world and then let it go. In the last place, Jesus says worry is distracting. In verse 34, he says, "Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble." Worry keeps you from dealing rightly with your immediate responsibilities. These are six biblical truths that Jesus has given us about worry. Next time, we'll begin looking at the replacements of worry, what we replace worry with, forms of trusting actions and attitudes and thoughts. So as we continue to pursue biblical living, may we root ourselves in Scripture alone as our guidebook for life.